The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita, as it is, Chapter 9, Text 3, given by Dhanavir Das Vanachari on November 8, 1992, at a folk meeting in Tampa, Florida.
In this devotional service, cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.31.14, Yata taror mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujo pashaka pranopaharachcha yatendriyana tataiva sarvarhanam achupteja. By giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all other living entities. End quote. Therefore, after reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. Now, the development of that faith is the process of Krishna consciousness. There are three divisions of Krishna conscious men. In the third class, there are those who have no faith. Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, they cannot achieve the highest perfectional stage. Most probably, they will slip after some time. They may become engaged, but because they haven't complete conviction and faith, it is very difficult for them to continue in Krishna consciousness. We have practical experience in discharging our missionary activity that some people come and apply themselves to Krishna consciousness with some hidden motive, and as soon as they are economically a little well situated, they give up this process and take to their old ways again. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. As far as the development of faith is concerned, one who is well versed in the literatures of devotional service and has attained the stage of firm faith is called a first-class person in Krishna consciousness. And in the second class are those who are not very advanced in understanding the devotional scriptures, but who automatically have firm faith that Krishna bhakti, or service to Krishna, is the best course, and so in good faith have taken it up. Thus, they are superior to the third class, who have neither perfect knowledge of the scriptures nor good faith, but by association and simplicity are trying to follow. The third class person in Krishna consciousness may fall down, but when one is in the second class, he does not fall down. And for the first class person in Krishna consciousness, there is no chance of falling down. One in the first class will surely make progress and achieve the results at the end. As far as the third class person in Krishna consciousness is concerned, although he has faith in the conviction that devotional service to Krishna is very good, he has not yet gained adequate knowledge of Krishna through the scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes these third-class persons in Krishna consciousness have some tendency toward karma yoga and jnana yoga, and sometimes they are disturbed But as soon as the infection of karma yoga or jnana yoga is vanquished, they become second class or first class persons in Krishna consciousness. Faith in Krishna is also divided into three stages and described in Srimad Bhagavatam. First class attachment, second class attachment, and third class attachment are also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. Those who have no faith, even after hearing about Krishna and the excellence of devotional service, who think that it is simply eulogy, find the path very difficult. Even if they are supposedly engaged in devotional service, for them there is very little hope of gaining perfection. Thus, faith is very important in the discharge of devotional service. Ashwadadana purusha dharmasyasya purantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsaravartanam. So this word faith is almost a dirty word nowadays. Scientists have thoroughly despised it and criticized it to the point where it's considered that anyone who has faith in God must be a simpleton and must surely not know anything about science or mathematics or physics or any of these things. Simply, such a person is to be pitied. Why should he have faith in something that he cannot experience with instruments, his senses, or his some kind of instrument that is made with the senses, such as computers or some kind of meter or telescopes or microscopes. In other words, he must somehow or other be able to experience it through the gross material senses. And consequently, the so-called intelligent persons are very hesitant to put their faith in something like God. But what happens is, instead of putting their faith in God, they put their faith in the black hole, or the singularity, or the big chunk, or the big scientists' theories. In other words, the faith is going to be there. Faith is a natural companion of the soul. It's just a question of who or what one puts one's faith into. So, one who doesn't put very much faith in devotional service or in Krishna's instructions, then their future is as described here. Aprapyamam nivartante. Aprapya, they don't obtain me. Nivartante, they come back. Mrityu, of death. Samsara, vartani. They come back on the path of birth and death. That's what happens to them. Of course, they're not so much concerned. They don't mind that very much. They say, well, I don't necessarily believe in future lives anyway. Nobody's ever come back to tell me that they died before. This is one of their classic statements. Nobody's ever come back from death. Of course, everyone's come back from death. And there are so many who even remember previous lives. Now they've done some studies and they've even found that there are rare cases where a person remembers his previous lifetime and can point out many astounding facts that ordinarily such a person would not know had they not been in such a situation. Generally, however, most people forget their previous life. Most people forget many parts of this life also. none of us could very properly describe what happened the first day we came out of the womb. Could any of you describe?
Distracted me, don't it? Right there. Yeah.
Thank you. So, could any of us describe what happened the first day we came out of the womb? Where did the doctor stand? What instruments did he use? You were there. Well, why don't you tell us what happened? You can't remember. So that's even in this life. So it's not so surprising then that we would forget what happened before this life, because after all, this life means after 9 months in the womb and the body developing, so it didn't have full consciousness until 7 months in the womb. Then coming out, even though we had consciousness, we couldn't see very well, we couldn't make things out, our mind, our brain wasn't very focused, we couldn't understand what things were and what... In other words, we had... Our body and our senses and our mind was in a very dull or not very developed stage, undeveloped. So certainly in our past life, we may have had all types of bodies. So sometimes people say, well, I don't believe this. I don't have faith that there was a previous life. I don't believe that there's a soul. But that just means they're, in a sense, they're not really thinking very carefully. They don't really want to think about it. They prefer to just shut it out. Because as soon as you think about it, for example, we always say my hand, or my head, or my heart. We don't say I heart, or I hand, or I head. We say my head. So whose head is it? Or whose arm is it? It's somebody's. You see? And what if I remember meeting one gentleman in Israel. He was in one of the wars and he got both legs cut off and one of his arms. So, but he was still living. So he obviously wasn't those legs and he wasn't those arms. Well, so what was he? And if he got the other arm blown up, that wouldn't also be him. So where are you? If you're not in the arms, you're not in the legs, you're not the ears. Some people have their ears cut off. I've seen some people have noses cut off. Some people have their teeth out. Some people lose their eyes. Some people lose their hair. So where are you? Even sometimes they take out the heart. Now they have transplant? Heart transplant. So he's not even the heart. He's still the same person. When he gets another heart, they bring in someone else's heart. He's still the same person. He's not the other person. So who is he? He's not the heart. He's not anything that we can see. He is the spirit soul. You take all the constituents. Because when a person dies, he's lying on the ground, and everyone's crying, oh, my father has passed away. Okay, well, where did he go? Did anyone see him leave? Well, no, he passed away, but... No, there he is. He's right there. He's lying on the ground. You know, that's not him. He's passed away. Well, who passed away? That's all we've ever seen. Did anyone see anyone jump out or... No. But what happens is, there's a soul inside that body that's very small. Very small, and it's also of a different nature. It's spiritual, so it can't even be seen by material vision. But it's there, nevertheless, and that is what that little compact unit of energy, of spiritual energy, is what activates this body. And as soon as that little particle leaves, and this body is dead on the ground. And there's nothing you can do to bring it back to life again. They say, oh, you ask the scientist, they'll say, well, there's a chemical imbalance. Some of the chemicals have changed. Okay, so if the chemicals have changed and you've analyzed it so carefully, why don't you bring some the missing chemical and inject it and then bring him back to life again. If it's just chemicals, like you say, if we're supposed to believe, if we're supposed to have faith,
right,
we're supposed to put our faith in your words. So prove it. Prove that it's chemicals by bringing him back to life again. Or, the other way around, if it's actually just chemicals, and you know what the chemicals are because you studied, then mix the chemicals and create life. Why don't you do that? So of course they cannot do these things. But yet they want us to believe in them. They want us to have faith in them. So there's a challenge going on here, you can see. Krishna is saying, put your faith in me. And they're saying, no, put your faith in us. Put your faith in us. So this kind of challenge is going on, and that's exactly why we've all come to this material world. Because we wanted to challenge Krishna's position. Krishna is saying, just do what I say. Have faith in me. I'll take care of you. I'll provide everything that you need, and you'll be completely happy. But instead, we're thinking, no, what do I need Krishna for? I can be the Supreme, and I have faith in myself. This you hear quite a bit. People say, even one song Mr. Sinatra wrote, or sang. Yeah, I did it my way. It may have been wrong, it doesn't matter. I don't care what happens, as long as I did it my way. That's the important thing. Doesn't matter that the Yamadutas are coming. You know what the Yamadutas are? The messengers of Yamaraj, and they come and they take souls who have engaged in improper activities, and they take them for some punishment. It doesn't matter that the Yamadutas are coming and that I've misled so many people and that I've wasted my human form of life and I'm going to have to become a worm in my next life. It doesn't matter. I did it my way. That's the important thing. That's all that counts. So this is all propaganda. That doing it your way is such a wonderful thing. Maybe your way isn't the best way. Maybe you should have done it someone else's way. It's like now they have AIDS. So he did it his way. He got AIDS his way. And now he's thinking, maybe I shouldn't have done it that way. Maybe I should have done it another way. A lot of people turn to Krishna consciousness more seriously after they get AIDS. We've noticed. We've seen many people, they say, well, I was into Krishna consciousness, but I guess I didn't take it seriously enough, so now I have AIDS. And now I really want to, and at least I know five or six that at the last stage they were chanting Hare Krishna, and they gave up their bodies. So, AIDS can also be helpful to help people remember Krishna. But that's one way. But there's another way. You don't have to get AIDS if you listen to Krishna in the first place. They say an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So better to follow his instructions in the beginning than wait till the end. You did it your way. You got AIDS your way. Better follow Krishna's instructions. Don't get AIDS. Be happy. And you don't have to take another birth. You become free from the cycle of birth and death. Samsara. This samsara. Mrityu samsara vartmani. Samsara means birth and death. So we don't want to continue. We have to be firmly convinced that we do not want to continue in this cycle of birth and death anymore. This is not a happy situation to be in. But unfortunately, those who are not very thoughtful, they just accept it. Well, you live, you die, that's it. Just live for now, enjoy yourself. But we see that it's a very precarious situation. Nobody really wants to die. They can say like that yes, I don't mind death if it comes. But when death comes, for example, if their house is on fire, then they run out screaming. Why not stay in and just accept death peacefully? They talk about that, dying peacefully. So where is that person who's willing to die peacefully? No, we want to live. Why do we want to live? Because it's our nature to live eternally. We are eternal, so we do live eternally, and we don't like this change of body experience. This changing bodies is is quite a disturbance for us. But we need to have association with devotees of the Lord who can explain these things to us. Otherwise, it's difficult to figure it out on our own. So many people, they want to be their own guru. They say, I don't need a guru, I don't need a spiritual master. I can figure it out myself. It's not so easy.
Who said this is no place for a gentleman? Was that Prabhupada?
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said, this material world is no place for a gentleman. So sometimes the devotees of Krishna are criticized for being too negative. Why are you negatively saying the material world is such a bad place? Why don't you just look at the bright side? Why are you so negative, they say like that? Why do you talk about death? You're always talking about death. Why don't you just talk about life? Be happy. No, because that's foolishness. I gave the example to my mother once. She was saying this. Why do you talk about death? It's too morbid. So I told her that it's like a person, like you. Let's say that you're watching TV and there's a big tarantula walks out of the kitchen. Now, you're watching the show, you really like the show. It's one of your favorite shows, and you don't particularly want to have to deal with a tarantula. So you hang a sheet. Right there, you just hang a sheet down from the kitchen, and it kind of covers the tarantula, so you don't see the tarantula. And then you go on, absorbed in, you know, potato chip pretzels, whatever, you know, beer, whatever you're doing. You're watching your TV. And then suddenly the tarantula bites you!
Oh, God.
Of course, she liked that example very much. But that's the point. In other words, we can try to block it out. We can put up a sheet, not think about it. But the tarantula is still there. The tarantula is not going to stop because you put a sheet up. Or just because you have your insurance policy paid up, that doesn't mean that death is going to, you know, is not going to pay any attention. Or you have your doors latched or whatever. Death is there. You can't stop it. You have to deal with it. So why don't you deal with it like a real intelligent person instead of just, you know, pushing it aside. Oh, I don't want to think about it. Deal with it. Solve it. Solve that problem. How can you solve that problem? There's only one way to solve that problem. And that is that you have to enter into the eternal platform. Rise above this cycle of birth and death. In other words, you have to get free from the law of karma. Because as long as one is bound up by the law of karma, then he has to continue taking birth again and death again and the whole business. So the way to get free from that is to engage in activities which do not produce karmic reactions. You have to engage in activities which will not have material results. That means spiritual activities. And spiritual activities are those activities which are authorized or recommended by Lord Krishna. And that is the perfect spiritual activity. Just like if you work for the government. If you work on behalf of the government, then you're not bound by the normal laws. Sometimes, for example, a government agent, say a policeman, who's a government man, he may drive very fast. And normally, he should be arrested for such driving. But he's not, because he's working on behalf of the government. So he can do whatever he needs to do, because he's always following the government's instructions. And he's free. He never gets arrested. Of course, unless he does something against the government's instructions. But a pure devotee will never do that. He'll always do what Krishna wants him to do. He's a fully surrendered servant. And this way, he's always protected. There's no chance of him coming under the laws of material nature, which means that he'll have to suffer. So he never has to suffer. He's always protected. Oh.
I'd like to just be able to be constant in that. It seems like I have such human nature and it's like I want to arrive above it. I feel like it's happening. It's like I want it now. More so.
Well, we should want it now, actually. That's a sign of intelligence. The problem is most of us are very complacent. Well, you know, when it comes. For example, sometimes we speak to our friends from India and we say, well, Lord Krishna is asking us to serve him. They say, yes, when the Lord is wanting, I am going to be serving. I will be surrendering when the Lord is wanting. But the Lord is wanting. He's wanting now. He wants us back with him. He doesn't want us to suffer. He doesn't want us to stay here. And he says so in the Bhagavad Gita. But sometimes we put it off and say, well, when God wants, then I'll do it. As if surrendering is up to God. It's not up to God, it's up to us. That free will we have. That's our choice. Do we wish to? Do we find the cycle of birth and death repugnant, or do we find it's not so bad? If we don't think it's so bad, then we can stay here. Krishna gives us that choice. Then stay. But staying here means disease, old age, anxieties, rebirth, staying in a womb for 9 months in an air pack, you know, with the danger that your mother may very kindly put a saline solution into you and then pull out the tweezers and, or chop you up. That's the risk you take, especially nowadays. If you come back into a mother's womb, it used to be they considered, was it Freud said that the mother's womb was supposed to be like a symbol of safety and protection? Not anymore. It's the most horrendous place, very dangerous place to be nowadays, mother's womb.
I seem to have vague memories of birth and death and the fear of, you know, like an insect and being watch. That kind of thing.
Well, we've all been insects. we've been squashed. That's true. So that's why all these fears that we have, just like we have a fear of jumping off buildings, even though we've never done it in this life. But when we look down, we become frightened because we can imagine. And so many fears are coming from our previous experiences. So all those experiences we had as you say, as an insect or as a monkey or as a human, or all those experiences we've had should bring us to the point of being quite fed up with material existence, with all the fears and phobias and anxieties and miseries that can happen. We should, now that we've reached this point, it's just like when a person has reached adulthood, they're supposed to be competent. They should have learned their lessons, so they're competent to follow the laws, and therefore they're liable. When they're a child, they're not treated with the same laws. A juvenile is, if he kills someone, or certain laws, they're not held so responsible. But when they become adults, the human life is like the adulthood of our sojourn in this material world. Now we're supposed to think deeply and use our intelligence, but unfortunately most people are just simply using their human life to act like animals.